Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
All right, good morning. It's Dave Plyer on 720 WGN. So most people do not realize it, but Chicago is home to many diverse, artistic, fascinating, and architecturally and historically important fountains. And in this brand new book that Greg Borzo just put out, reveals more than 100 outdoor public fountains of Chicago with noteworthy, amusing, or surprising stories about these gems. It's called Chicago's Fabulous Fountains. Now, Greg is an award-winning journalist, an editor, and the author of The Chicago L, Chicago Cable Cars, and other books about Chicago, where he has lived most of his life, and he joins us on this early Sunday morning. Good morning to you, Greg.
Good morning, Dave.
You know, the fountains around the city really celebrate, I think, and complement the beautiful lakes and the rivers and the streams that we're surrounded with all around Chicagoland.
Absolutely. And most people don't know more than one or two fountains, so
yeah.
I'm out to get Chicagoans more aware of the over 100 really fascinating fountains out there.
You stop by, you might drive by them, you might look at them and appreciate its beauty, but you don't really know the background or who it was named after or how it was started or who designed it. And I know we have like over 125 fountains in the city. Where did you even start, as I looked at this beautiful book, in the research process to not only get these new photos, but I mean all the older photos, the archival photos, plans, and the stories behind them?
Well, I usually start at the Chicago History Museum with my research. They have a wonderful archive there of photos and written records. But another big part of this book was walking and biking around the city.
That's
because,
cool.
As you mentioned, when you drive by, you're likely to miss a lot of the fountains, even the big ones. But if you just cover the city by foot or by bike, you'll notice them, and you'll be surprised.
Yeah, yeah, it's history. The first documented fountain that you talked about in the book in Chicago, what was located at what was Chicago's first park?
Yes, Dearborn Park, where the Cultural Center stands today.
Okay.
And there was a small traditional park and a little fountain in the middle. It's almost like a park kind of requires, at least in my book, a nice fountain. And so back to the 1850s, we saw that.
Wow.
In Chicago.
Just from a photograph then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And photographs and records. Northern Trust Bank makes greeting cards every year, and they selected that park with that fountain as one of their greeting cards. They've done this over the last 75 years.
Wow.
That's how I discovered
that
particular fountain, that it existed. So there's a variety of sources.
Where's the city's oldest surviving fountain?
That would be at 51st and Drexel. That's the Drexel Fountain, named after the Drexel patriarch who started that bank back in Philadelphia.
Okay.
And it's odd that that's our oldest fountain because it's thought that Drexel never even set foot in Chicago.
Yeah, very odd. Yeah.
He sent his sons out to Chicago to handle.
There's a family legacy here, but he was never here.
Never here. Oh. And yet he is honored at the top of this very ornate fountain from 1883.
And it was one of those fountains that was also out of commission for decades until, the 1990s?
Off and on, but it was in terrible shape during the 70s and 80s. But the area is beautifully renovated now, and it speaks to the power of a fountain to help rejuvenate an area that maybe had deteriorated over time.
The second is called Storks at Play. Tell us a little bit about this one.
Storks at Play is a fun fountain that is playful, whimsical. It features three merboys who are holding fish and dancing in the water, water splashing everywhere. But the very funny thing about that fountain it's in Lincoln Park, right by the Lincoln Park Conservatory.
Okay.
Easy to see. Yep. Very large, beautiful fountain. But there are no storks in Storks at Play. It was misnamed. And I know that because I used to work at the Field Museum, and ornithologist Doug Stotz checked out that fountain and determined that they're actually swans.
So we've just kind of let that name kind of stick around.
We have, but yeah. Doug was not able to, no one at the Field Museum was able to identify the species or genus of the merboys.
I love that you looked into that. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, yeah.
But ironically, the merboys upset the park district when MacMonnies, the architect, the sculptor artist who made the fountain, the commissioners were upset because the little merboys were not covered, and they ordered fig leaves to be applied to the merboys. And so they were on there for years, but of course have since been removed.
Wow. I love the history of the Drake Fountain, and it was designed really as kind of a public water fountain, so to speak, you know, for drinking?
A public fountain with architectural elements, but also a drinking fountain at the same time.
Okay.
And it was possibly unique for its time because it had underneath this cavern that was loaded with ice every day in the summer.
Oh.
And so they would run the water through coils through the ice, and then people in the 1890s could have ice cold water.
Yeah, think about that.
Yeah, that was pretty
groundbreaking,
cool.
Right? Yeah.
And I'm glad you asked about that fountain because it's one of four that have a direct link to the World's Fair of 1893.
Right, that's
which,
right, yeah.
Continues to fascinate people so much. So that fountain was built to
give. It had a purpose.
On purpose.
For people to drink it while they're at their fair.
Well, while they were on their way to and from the fair.
Yeah, okay.
Because it was located downtown, but it was built in anticipation of the fair.
Now, it was moved in the early 1900s after Mr. Drake passed away. And I found this interesting that the Knights of Columbus stepped in to make sure that it was still prominently placed in the city once it was relocated.
The Knights of Columbus were not happy about
that
because the Drake Fountain that we're talking about had a large statue of Christopher Columbus. And again, the fountain was commissioned for the World's Columbian Exposition. So the Knights of Columbus took a great pride in that fountain. And then after the fair ended, the city felt that the fountain located downtown was attracting too much riffraff and the horses were drinking out of the drinking fountains. Mm-hmm. And so they moved it far, far south to 92nd and Chicago and Exchange down on the far south side, where it still stands today. But the Knights fought it and threatened a political retribution to the mayor at that time, but they didn't have quite enough clout to keep the fountain where it was originally located.
Now, is that the only fountain? You talk about four fountains for the World's Columbian Exhibition. How many others are still operating, or is that
for the fair? There might have been dozens and dozens of fountains, but there's four that still stand in Chicago, which is pretty amazing because people, due to the book Devil in the White City and the forthcoming movie based on Devil in the White City, which will renew the interest in the fair, people are really fascinated by the fair. And so, we don't really have a building that's, the Museum of Science and Industry is related to the fair, but it was rebuilt. But these four fountains are a direct link to that wonderful World's Fair.
It's amazing.
And my favorite of the four is Fountain Girl.
Okay.
That is a fountain of a young girl holding a basin with water dripping down into a larger pool.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the main feature of the exhibit of the Women's Christian Temperance Union at the World's Fair. And their point was to encourage people to drink water instead of beer, which was quite popular in Chicago in those days.
I'm sure, and probably cleaner.
Much.
Right,
The beer was cleaner and safer.
Yeah.
And also, drinking water from this fountain was actually unsafe because the way you did it was you used a metal cup that was chained to the base of the fountain. So you have all these people, thousands of people every day drinking from the same cup.
Wow.
And people did not realize then that they were spreading diseases. So they might have been better off with beer. Sorry about
that,
WCTU.
See, now, if they would have put beer through the fountain with the coils keeping it cold, they may have had something there, right?
That
exactly.
would have been something, yes.
Let's talk about the 4th of July fountain. I like this one.
that's kind of un-PC by today's standards.
Yeah, yeah.
It is.
It's got an interesting story.
The Independence Square 4th of July fountain opened with much fanfare. And the trick about that fountain is it has a boy and a girl who are playing with fireworks.
Yeah.
They're holding Roman candles.
Yeah, yeah.
And originally when the fountain opened, water spewed out of these devices, and they were illuminated red so that it looked like sparks.
Yeah, gotcha.
And everything. So you would never see that.
No, not very PC, but it's one of my favorites, though, that I saw in the book.
Unfortunately, it's not operating right now. There's several fountains that have been kind of abandoned. They're not being maintained, and that one is one that needs a good renovation, a good shot in the arm.
Now, the Gargoyle Fountain went up so many years ago, but it was rebuilt by Mayor Daley. He kind of had a mission to kind of rebuild and reinvigorate the fountains around Chicago.
He really did. Yeah. Richard M. Daley, Richard II, loved trees, wrought iron fences, flower pots, and one of his additional ways to try to beautify the city was fountains. So he launched a program in the late 1990s to sprinkle the city with fountains. He had intention to put up scores of fountains around Chicago. His mistake was that he had his Department of Transportation pick a particular design. He was going to put the same fountain everywhere. And folks like Blair Kamen at the Tribune and other critics, artists said, no, you should put fountains in that are appropriate for the neighborhood.
Okay,
and
makes sense.
But, so Daley continued on that project. And through that program, probably as many as 20 fountains were built.
That's amazing.
Some of them quite successful. Many of them designed by Ed Winhurst. One person designed most of those fountains.
Wow.
And did a great job on matching the fountain to the neighborhood. A good example of that is the Printer's Row fountain on Dearborn and Harrison. And that fountain picks up design elements from the neighboring buildings in that historic district.
And that's important because a lot of these fountains represent really the neighborhood and the culture that is part of that community.
Yes, and you want the community to be invested.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they'll help maintain it. One fountain that's not appreciated by the community is the Nelson Algren Fountain, and that's at Ashland and Division.
Okay.
And it's in the heart of the old Polish community, and Nelson Algren wrote books that did not put the Polish residents
as
in
the
very
community,
good light.
As the communities have changed, of course.
And there's still a strong Polish element in that area, and they were not pleased to see that fountain named after Nelson Algren.
Interesting.
And so I don't think they have investment in that fountain.
In that one.
As a result, that's a pretty rundown fountain.
As the communities change, of course, right? Mm-hmm. Some of the more popular ones that more people are familiar with, Buckingham Fountain just turned 90.
How about that?
Yeah. Let's talk about its history a little bit here to who the Buckinghams were.
The musical group?
Yes, let's talk about them first.
It's funny. A lot of people think the fountain is named after Buckingham Palace. Mm. In fact, the Buckinghams, the musical group, is named after the fountain. The fountain was named Buckingham because
Clarence Buckingham, right?
After Clarence Buckingham.
Yeah, yeah.
His sister decided in his memory to fund this enormous fountain. And
they made their family in real estate, steel, and this was the last member, Kate, of the Buckingham family. And she was an art patron. She was a philanthropist. And they've donated quite a bit to the Art Institute, too, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Well, the wonderful thing about what Kate Buckingham did is not only she built the fountain, but she created a fund to maintain it which is still viable.
That's
and
fabulous.
So through all this 90 years and going forward, there's money to maintain the fountain, which is a real downfall of many other fountains.
Now, I saw this in DNA Info this past week. A 1,000-pound chunk of marble billed as a fragment of Chicago's famed Buckingham Fountain is for sale. Sticker price is $22,000. Shipping is only $299. Northside Antiques dealer Stuart Grannon is trying to sell this piece as Chicagoans celebrate the 90th anniversary. He doesn't recall what he paid for the stone, which he bought decades ago from a North Shore woman who was a descendant of Edward Bennett, the architect who designed Buckingham Fountain in the 1920. So you too can have a piece for $22,000.
Well, maybe
grand.
I could swap a couple books for that chunk of Buckingham
yeah,
Fountain.
$22,000. Absolutely. you know, there are so many fountains with amazing symbolism that you've talked about that have disappeared from our landscape. What are some of the standouts that are no longer around that really define Chicago?
Well, there's a beautiful fountain that used to pour off of the side of the former Chicago Daily News building. It was a unique fountain, three large flows of water running down three floors into that plaza area by the river. Unfortunately, that's been pretty much walled over and it does not operate anymore. I really miss the Pioneer Court Fountain. It was right
outside our studios,
outside
here.
Of where we're speaking today, in the plaza there, where Marilyn Monroe was,
and
Grant Wood's artwork. And that fountain had the name of 25 of Chicago's founders, pioneers, around the border of it. And so, I, being a little bit of a history fan, I think that was pretty cool because it might have inspired people walking by to
good storytelling.
Figure out, well, who's Hubbard?
Who are these people? Right.
Who are these people? Unfortunately, that only lasted 25 years. They took that fountain out. It got a little run down, and some of the letters went missing on the names of these pioneers. So I was sorry to see that one go.
There's, of course, the Crown Fountain, which is a major part of Millennium Park.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is probably one of the most glorious fountains in the world.
Yeah.
I was fortunate enough to chat with Jaime Plensa when he came to Chicago for the 10th anniversary of that fountain in 2014. And I asked him if he thought we should change out the faces. It's been 10 years to give someone else a chance. He said, no, it's a piece of art.
Oh, okay.
We are not going to tamper with it.
Fair enough.
He might have read some of the articles that we should sell the right to be on those screens, and maybe he was trying to avoid that kind of awkward decision-making process. I also asked him if he had ever or would ever make that same fountain for another city, and he said, no. This was made with Chicago in mind.
I like that.
And I will never duplicate it. I'll never replicate it anywhere.
There's one more I want to talk about, the Millennium Monument. There was another fountain that stood in that space, it says here, from 1917 to 1953, and it inspired one that's there today. I love that story.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
So we lose some fountains, but sometimes they reappear. The peristyle that included a fountain, a geyser of water, was torn down and was made of concrete. It didn't hold up well, especially in Chicago's winters, and so it was used for landfill. And that's,
you know, that drives me crazy to even hear that part. But
that sad? But when they made Millennium Park, they wanted to recreate, and they did a beautiful job of recreating that peristyle and the fountain.
It's amazing.
It looks almost identical to the original one. Now, this one's made of limestone. It's going to last, hopefully, forever.
Well, I got to tell you, this is a beautiful hardcover book. So many amazing pictures. I mean, it's a really beautiful book. And such great stories and history. And the Chicago's fabulous fountains. Lots of history, beautiful photography available now at your local booksellers, Amazon, wherever books are sold. Greg, honestly, great book. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm on a mission to get people to get out there and inspect and learn about these fountains.
And as the summer comes around, we should be doing just that.
Perfect.
Thanks, my friend. All right. This is History coming up next on 720 WGN.